What I was trying to say is that if I can change,
я думаю, что каждый тоже изменился сегодня.
And you can change.
Вы можете измениться.
Everybody can change.
Chris is licking alcohol off the bar on episode 17 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hello, the internet. Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast. My name is Jeff Rollins.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Chris Rollins.
Oh.
Jeff's long lost
brother. Mother. That's my mother over there, Chris Rollins.
You're listening to episode 17 of the Cut Print Film Podcast.
Yes, we can now drive. This little podcast
we're
can
almost
finally
fuckable.
Drive. Yeah. Almost.
In some states, we are.
That's we right. Look very fuckable, but it's not legal yet.
That's right.
We're going to be booty shorts on.
We're on the More Like Radio Podcast Network. You can check them out at morelikeradio.com.
That's right. You can also find us on the internet at cutprintfilm.com.
Ooh.
And facebook.com/cutprintfilm.
Ooh.
And that's slash as in the guitars for Guns
yes,
N' Roses.
It's slash as in slash fiction.
It's facebook.com, a picture of Slash from Guns N' Roses, and then cutprintfilm. And that's how you find us. It's very, very difficult.
It's really complicated. I don't know why they set up that system.
By the way, we're doing this little promotion on Facebook. If you guys can get us to 500 likes, we will voluntarily watch and review Adam Sandler's latest opus, Blended.
Mm, and we're close. We're 100 away,
yes,
I think. So.
Less than 100. We're 96 away
all
as
right,
of this
then.
Podcast.
So if you know 96 people, get them all to like us.
Yeah, so just you know, re-Facebook. I don't know how that works.
That's not
like
a term, Dave. No.
Yeah, share it. I don't know.
Just Pinterest it.
Yeah, you definitely want to Pinterest it. Pin it.
Do you guys... do you feel like we have too much energy?
No. Nope.
I don't think anyone's ever accused me of that.
That is never a problem with me.
Every podcast I listen to, they're so much more like dull and laid back than us.
Well, you must be listening to NPR exclusive podcasts.
No, I think it's because everyone smokes weed during their podcast.
Speaking of which... what's that? High Society Radio.
Oh, yeah. Check out High Society Radio at morelikeradio.com.
Oh, is that why it's called High?
Yeah, I think so.
Now I get it.
I believe there's a lot of
it
weed
has a
talk.
Couple names. They call it New Trash City, too. I don't know what that is about. But they're awesome.
Yeah. Good guys.
Doug Benson's podcast. I don't know if you've ever listened to his, but it's just a weed.
Yeah.
They laugh a lot. So I guess you're funnier on weed.
Everything's
funny. Podcast, too.
Everything's
yeah,
funny.
Kevin
weed.
Smith's. Podcast.
Yeah, you can like hear him. Like
you can also
weed.
Hear him laughing maniacally at everything that isn't even a joke to begin with.
And you can also hear him eating all the donuts.
Yes, and you can hear me turning the podcast off 3 seconds into it.
Throwing my phone in the trash. That's how badly I don't want to listen to it.
Was that Jeff turning his podcast off? It sounded weird.
So what are we doing today, as I like to ask every episode?
We're podcasting.
All right.
Oh, you should also listen to antifanboy.org.
Yes, orca.org.
Antifanboy.gov.
Yes.
They're really pro Sea World. They love their – there's a new – they're
Sea
making
World?
Their own
– What is
– They're making
is
their
this?
Own version of Blackfish.
Oh,
but
all
it's
right.
pro killing whales.
Oh, all right. Well, then I'm all in.
I think it meant like the letter C world. And I was like, that's not anything.
Who would ever mean that?
I don't know.
Hey,
you.
Hey, guys. What the fuck are we talking about?
Oh, anyway, moving on.
I'm very confused.
I feel no pressure.
All right.
So, in a galaxy far, far away, not really, this one.
Very good. Good work.
We got it
the
felt...
old bait and switch, Dave. That was fantastic.
You had me fooled for a split second.
It felt like Dream News came down. That like I was like, am I watching the Dream News channel? Because
where they showed Dream Girls 24/7.
They announced
they showed Dream Catcher.
Yeah, Dream Catcher, Dream Girls, and you play the Dream Case.
Go ahead. I promise I won't cut you off this time. When
no,
you're sorry.
I'm fine. They announced that Rian Johnson is going to be directing Star Wars Episode 8. And writing episode 9, which means he'll probably be directing it too, but doesn't want to commit to it.
I don't think he'll direct 9.
Is he writing 8?
He's writing
yeah.
8. He's writing 8, and he's doing a treatment for 9.
That is such good news.
It is.
That's what blew me away. I saw that the first thing I saw was he's directing a Star Wars movie. I was like, that's fucking awesome. It'll be something quirky and weird.
Yeah.
And probably will never happen like Ant-Man.
more
then,
like Cant-Man or Shant-Man.
And then...
Right.
Thanks, everyone.
It's making me laugh because it's not funny. And then I saw that he was directing 8. Then I saw that he was writing 8. And I was like, holy fuck, this is going to be good.
Yeah. I've said before, I am not a Star Wars guy. But this is a piece of news that actually has me, you know, somewhat excited.
It almost
for
seems
these
like
movies.
It almost seems like a trick. Like you're going to get to the theater and they're going to be like, "Just kidding."
It was you bowl directed. Yeah, instead.
We're just kidding. We didn't really get Rian Johnson.
So what does it say about their relationship with J.J. Abrams? Does he just not want to do it?
Abrams, basically, the story is that he wants to do more of a producer role. He pretty much wants to do like George Lucas did with the original trilogy, where
he franchises it out.
Yeah, he directs the first one, and then he oversees the other two. That's pretty much... So he's sort of going to be like the granddaddy of...
Well, he picked a good director slash writer.
It's probably a stressful fucking job.
I almost feel a little bad for J.J. Abrams, because... Not too big.
People were so excited.
Because he's a millionaire, so he has no real problems, but... Yeah, everyone's sort of like, oh my god, Rian Johnson, this is going to be great, and no one's talking about J.J. Abrams anymore. And the internet hates J.J. Abrams. I don't know if you guys knew this, but...
Yeah, they do.
The internet does not care for him.
I'm not sure why. I don't know if it's because he abandoned Lost. I don't know. Or because of what he did to Star Trek.
I abandoned my Lost!
I just... Well, Daniel Plainview's in the studio.
J.J. Abrams is a very capable director.
He is a talented guy. I like him. I don't get the hate. I guess it's because Star Trek Into Darkness is subpar, which I'll admit to, but...
But it's still
looks great. He's a really good director.
Cloverfield was fun.
He didn't direct that.
Well,
Super 8 was
fun.
But
he wrote it. He wrote that, right?
He sort of... Yeah, he was like the executive producer.
Super 8 I liked. I didn't love Super 8, but I did like it.
His movies have like the problem of... They have weak scripts, but his direction is solid. So people need to chill on the J.J. Abrams hate.
Yeah, because he's not writing this. So.
Yeah, he's not. I think he is, actually.
No, they got the dude from Empire Strikes Back to write it.
He's writing it with him.
By that, I mean Lawrence Calrissian.
Yes,
naturally.
Boba Fett is writing it.
A character is writing it. Yes.
On his ship, Slave One.
Yeah, I think it's exciting that Rian Johnson's doing these movies. Well, at least one that we know of.
It is.
For sure.
I have a good friend named Rian Johnson, and this throws me off.
Is it this guy?
No.
Can we get him on the show?
Yeah, can we have an interview with your friend and just post it?
So what's it like having the same name as this director that not a whole lot of people know?
Tell us what you'll do with Star Wars. I don't know what you're talking about.
What would you do with Star Wars if you were actually the famous Rian Johnson?
If you were the Rian Johnson who fucking mattered, what would you do?
Folks, these are the hard-hitting questions you can find us asking on cutprintfilm.com.
Yes, where we interview people with like names.
We're a very niche site.
Nietzsche.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're meaningless.
God is dead.
Where are we going? Okay, so Rian Johnson.
Yes.
Does anybody know who he is?
Yes.
By anybody, I'm talking about to you, the listener.
Oh, hang on. Let's wait for you. This is going to be a very long time to hear back.
Call in with your answers.
Oh, hello? Who is it?
I don't know who he is.
All right. Well, Dave, why don't you explain it to this guy with mush mouth?
This guy eating mashed potatoes.
There's a mashed potato monster in the studio, and he doesn't know who Rian Johnson is. Go ahead, Dave. Explain.
I was very excited about Rian Johnson from day one. I don't mean to sound like a fucking hipster.
God, Dave.
But...
Take off those slacks.
Yeah.
I loved Brick. No matter how much my wife would sit next to me going, this movie fucking sucks.
I love Brick. I fucking love it.
When I first watched Brick, I didn't really dig it.
Really?
I thought it was kind of like... over the top, and I understand.
Not bricky enough for you?
Yeah, not enough bricks.
I mean, it's a very...
I thought it was like a building documentary, and it wasn't at all.
You thought it was about Bob the Builder. It was the gritty reboot of Bob the Builder. Brick is a movie that, when I saw that in theater, it got me excited.
Yeah.
Very few movies these days, I see that I walk out and I'm excited, and that was a movie that just... It's a cool movie, for lack of a better word. And it uses...
You know what? That is my problem with it. I thought it was trying to be too cool.
It is
trying.
Well, it's trying really hard to be cool, but I think it succeeds. There's just some great direction in it. There's a scene where a character gets shot in the head, and there's a long shot, and you see smoke coming out of the back of his head. That's a gorgeous shot. It's so good.
And it's also too cool in that like noir detective
it's intentionally hard-boiled is
kind of like a Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
right?
And but darling, that's arson.
The car that went to jail.
What? Or The Long Kiss Goodnight, because they're the same movie.
Right, well, according to me.
Well, they're both written by the same guy, so that's good enough.
And then the story behind Brick is you have this debut director pulling an act... Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, don't bring the Lord's name into this.
He's not invited to this show.
He pulled Joseph Gordon-Levitt pretty much out of obscurity, right. Like sitcom obscurity.
He was the long-haired alien.
Yeah, his claim to fame was Third Rock from the Sun. So
yeah, it would essentially be like if Urkel was all of a sudden in a fucking
Jaleel
movie.
White
in a hard-boiled crime movie, which I kind of want
to
see now.
I would love to see that, but he's playing Stefan Urkel. Yeah.
But Ryan Johnson just went to film school, got out of film school, and then raised a bunch of money, $250,000. I think it was between that and $500,000. From investors, the way you're supposed to do it.
Right.
And made Brick, like, all by himself.
Yeah.
Just did it.
Like, everything just kind of worked.
Yeah.
He's a director who's very... to use a cliche, he plays by his own rules.
Oh, well. Is he Van Damme?
Yes, he is. He's hard to kill.
This summer.
He's out for justice.
But what are those rules?
The rules, basically, he turns down movies.
Players will start by age, and they will go counterclockwise. Those are the rules.
Talk about Ryan Johnson.
A big thing for his movies is that he doesn't want to direct them if he can't write them. So I it's kind of cool that he's writing Star Wars. I don't think he would do it any other way. He's not interested in directing movies.
When did Brick come out?
2005, I want to say.
Can you imagine...
Brick's been around for hundreds of years.
Nine years later, you're 9 years from your debut film, and you're directing Star Wars.
I can't think of another director who's had such a huge skyrocket in.
I would say James Gunn.
I guess so. Yeah, because
this is bigger though.
Because James Gunn has been around for a long time. He's just, this is his Guardians of the Galaxy is his biggest movie, but he's been around for a while. Whereas Ryan Johnson has been making movies since 2005, which is such a short... To go from Brick to Star Wars is huge.
Yeah. I mean, Looper... You can't not give Looper the credit it's due. Like, that's a big, stepping off
point. I love that movie. It's very entertaining.
And that's what got him Star Wars, not Brick.
No.
Well, in between those is Brothers Bloom.
Well, he wrote that. He didn't direct it.
No, he did direct it.
Did he direct it?
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest Brothers Bloom fan, I have to admit.
I enjoy it immensely just because of the...
The Dirty Rotten Scoundrel parallels.
See, that's a movie that I have a problem with, sort of the reason Jeff has a problem with Brick, and that movie feels too cool, for me. Because they all got the cool suits and stuff.
Yeah, it's very skinny guys in suits.
Yeah.
I think it was his attempt to...
Oh, do a Wes Anderson picture?
Or a Coen Brothers movie. Oh, more of a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah.
Did you get any Guy Ritchie out of that movie as well?
I feel like I can see that. Like Rock and Rolla.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, exactly like that.
When was the last time someone referenced Rock and Rolla?
Well,
no one.
We just did it, and we're going to do it 15 minutes from now.
I think the Rock and Rolla parallel has to do with the fact that they came out around the same time, so that they felt very similar in, like, the whole heist kind of thing. And don't they both revolve around... stealing a painting or something like that?
I can't remember.
No.
I can't remember at all.
But I like the whole eccentric Rachel Weisz.
She's great. Yeah. She's the best part of
I
that
enjoy
movie.
Rachel Weisz. I like her a lot.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I hate the Brothers Bloom. I just, it's sort of like after Brick, I was sort of in that mindset of, I can't wait to see what this guy does next. And that's what he did next. And I said, that's not what I wanted. So
yeah, it is out of left field.
Yeah.
When you go from Brick to the Brothers Bloom.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not a bad movie. And I love Looper. I think Looper is excellent.
And Looper goes back to that noir feeling. Like,
yeah.
It's a sci-fi noir, really.
Looper is one of those rare movies that gets a fucking actual performance out of Bruce Willis.
Right. He shows up.
Yeah. Who usually sleepwalks through his roles now.
Bruce, are you squinting or are you in a coma? What are you doing?
Human corpse, Bruce Willis.
Looper does the things correctly that Brothers Bloom did incorrectly.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you could still see the Brothers Bloom in Looper. Like, like the whole club scenes and stuff.
Yeah, because Looper has a lot of that cool stuff.
Yeah, like that cool.
He's got that cool jacket and that cool car.
And he's learning French.
Yes.
as one does.
As a cool person often does.
I don't know.
They sort of like poke fun of that because there's a scene where they meet in the diner where Joseph Gordon-Levitt meets Bruce Willis, and he says, like, all that stuff he thought that was cool is just from fucking movies that people thought was cool.
Oh, yeah. Like, so it's kind of meta.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love a good meta scene in the film. There's not enough of that.
Yeah, they don't do enough meta things these days.
I love a good comedy with meta in it.
Please, more meta, please.
He literally calls him Bruce Willis in that scene.
Oh, that's...
It's like, what do you think you are? Hudson Hawk, he says.
And then he broke out in the song.
Yeah. You're dying hard.
I did not like the conclusion of Looper.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it wrapped it up.
I liked it.
I like Looper all around. It's a good movie.
Because
it stars Jeff's favorite actress, Emily Blunt.
Oh, yeah. She's just fantastic.
I think she's really good in that, actually.
I don't hate Emily Blunt. I just find her bland. Yeah. Like, I don't dislike vanilla ice cream either.
I thought you were going to say vanilla ice.
No, I love vanilla ice.
Yeah, let's not go there. He builds barns now with the Amish.
He's flipping houses. He's a mover and a shaker, that ice.
Looper's kind of dark too, which gives me hope for Star Wars.
Bruce Willis kills a kid in Looper. So yes.
Not only that, but the fucking scene.
And it's Haley Joel Osment.
Ironically.
Yes, yeah, it's crazy.
He goes back in time to the set of the Sixth Sense.
There's the whole Paul Dano thing where he's Dan O'Dano, whatever, which that's the jury's still out on that one, but yeah. He's cutting him up like that keep scene cutting his limbs off.
That is a disturbing scene where he's crawling and parts of his body just vanish
through time.
That upset me to no end.
That's
still upsets me.
That's a rough one.
His
sure.
tongue is gone.
I'm just waiting for one of my hands to disappear at any moment. Yeah,
well, don't fuck with Jeff Daniels and you won't have this problem.
Oh shit.
I just remembered I fucked with Jeff Daniels.
Didn't you hear that Dumb and Dumber 2 rant we did?
So it gives me hope that Star Wars is going to have some dark shit in it.
Would you say this is a new hope?
Mm.
What I did there?
Very meta. I would say it's a new hope, for me at least, because I really couldn't give a fuck about the Star Wars movies until now.
I'm excited about them. I'm not a big Star Wars guy, but I don't know. I've sort of gotten caught up with the hype of this. I don't know. I think it'll be fun. At the very least, they're going to be entertaining movies.
Yeah.
I can't see these being bad movies.
No, they won't. They won't be bad.
You think they learned a lesson?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, George Lucas...
was letting George Lucas touch a camera.
Hey, guys. I think we're going to do a love scene between a child and a woman.
I literally had to look around the room because I'm like, where is his voice coming from?
George Lucas.
He called in from Skywalker Ranch.
It's actually Lord Jukas. That's his name.
It's a terrible
name.
That's
awful. It sounds like a phlegmy cough. Yeah,
Lorge.
So it's also cool that he's doing the eighth movie.
Right.
Because it's like that transitional movie that has room to be whatever it wants to be, kind of.
And it sort of seems like they're keeping with the tradition of the first Star Wars trilogy, where the second movie will be the better of the three.
Yeah. Albeit unnecessary.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you guys had to pick, because I still don't think he's directing the third one. So, if you guys had to pick a third film director for this Star Wars trilogy, what would it be?
Wow.
Why don't you go first? Because you probably have something in mind.
I would kind of like Alfonso Cuarón to direct.
That would be very cool.
I think that would be kind of
very different.
It would be very different, but I mean. And he's no stranger to coming into a franchise because he did it with Harry Potter, and that's the best of the Harry Potter films, in my opinion. So
he's no stranger to franchises, basically. I don't know. This is tough. You got anybody?
Sorry, I guess I should have told you guys this before we started the show.
Off the top of my head, I think of another franchise that deals with aliens, Ridley Scott.
That would be cool.
I mean... Like it would again.
Oh, I got my guy.
Be very different.
It would,
but I think it would be cool.
I would love to see Ridley Scott hit it out of the park again because it's been a while.
Yeah,
witness the Counselor.
I would like to see Duncan Jones direct it.
He would actually be really good. That would be great. Yeah. Yes.
Can I change my pick to Duncan Jones?
To Dunkin' Donuts.
Changers. Yeah, Duncan Hines.
America runs on Duncan Jones.
Duncan Jones is actually a very good pick. That would be pretty spectacular.
We'll have to see how Warcraft does.
Yes, I guess so.
Mm. he has the child, like he has the same kind of style. He's that, in that class aesthetic. With Rian Johnson,
right?
Not like I was in high school.
No, you were not in Rian Johnson's class, Rian Johnson. Unfortunately.
And stay tuned; we're gonna have him on later.
The real Rian Johnson.
Yeah, no,
who's actually kind of a bore.
Yeah.
The director of Star Wars.
Yeah,
I've listened to some interviews with him, and he's not the most entertaining guy. But
yeah, I have a quote here that I saved from Rian Johnson.
Oh, the quote says, "I love sawdust."
Yeah, that wasn't it, though.
It's not very exciting.
I love watching golf endlessly. His quote is, "I bristle a little when the argument for film gets put into the nostalgia ghetto. Film is still the highest quality and best looking image capture medium available. I don't think it always will be. The digital age will get better, and it will eventually surpass the quality of the film image, but it isn't there yet." So the reason I wrote that quote down was, aside from it being so incredibly boring, is...
That's like motivational speaker talk. It's like TED Talks.
It's like a fucking lecture, not even.
Do you think that he's going to film Star Wars?
Actually, there
is... with practical effects?
The rumor is that it's going to be shot on 35mm.
That is awesome.
Yes.
I
don't know about the first one, but the rumor for his version.
Rumors can be rumor. There's no way Disney will let him film that on film.
You don't think so?
No. I don't know. I don't know.
I wish they would, because I would really love that.
Especially after J.J. Abrams. They're going to make him do whatever J.J. Abrams does. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when you're under the mercy of Disney, you have to kind of do what they say, especially coming in the middle of a franchise.
Yeah.
And I just think it's too big of a film to... I mean, it would be
to
awesome.
Fuck around with.
Yeah. I mean, according to IndieWire, it's actually... I did not realize this, but it says Abrams is actually shooting episode whatever on...
8, 7.
Yeah, 7 on...
IIV.
Yeah. He's actually shooting on 35mm, so if Abrams is doing it...
Oh, yeah, well, then
and that's
I
actually
agree.
A confirmed rumor. Not a rumor, it's a confirmed thing.
I've now turned the corner, and I'm excited for these movies.
Can we rewind to the part where I said that they would never do that?
Yeah.
And we'll cut it out.
And highlight it and blast it.
We'll open the show with it.
With Dave is wrong messages blaring.
All right, we've...
point was that they're going to make him do whatever J.J. Abrams does.
Yeah, I think we've exhausted Rian Johnson.
Have we?
Yeah.
I could keep going.
He's tired. He's over there, passed out on the couch.
Yeah, we shouldn't have punched him so much.
I think I broke several ribs myself. We were leg wrestling.
We had somewhere to go. But I forget. So, what are we? We going to move on?
Yeah, let's move on.
Talking about Star Wars.
All right, well.
Well, if you had something, throw it out there.
I don't know. I want to talk about the Star Wars storyline, but I think we already did that.
All right, now that you know Rian Johnson is directing episode 8, which of the three are you looking forward to the most?
The Duncan Jones
one. Yeah, the hypothetical Duncan Jones one.
I'm actually really looking forward to the... who's the other guy directing the spinoff?
Oh, Gareth Edwards?
Trusk. Yeah, the Gareth Edwards one.
Yeah.
Will be goofy.
I don't know how I feel about these spinoffs yet.
I don't feel anything about the spinoffs. I don't care about them.
It just feels like you don't need them.
But I think this is cool because is episode 8, like, did they give a date for it?
No. Not according to this one webpage I have open in front of me.
No, Dave, the answer is no. We've checked one source.
One source says.
IndieWire does not mention it, so.
Because... fanboys have been assuming that it would go episode 7, spin-off, episode 8, spin-off, but maybe it's just going to go episode 7, episode 8, and the spin-offs will come out around Christmas.
Hopefully. Hopefully there's more. 12 movies is just not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need more.
All right. Well, that concludes the Star Wars podcast, brought to you by...
Dunkin' Donuts. Mm-mm. I sure do love donuts and coffee. Love me some Dunkin' Donuts.
Non-specific donuts and coffee will do.
Did anything else happen this week, or should we go to break?
Let's go to break.
Yeah, nothing happened.
Please, all right. Get me out of here.
We'll be back right after these messages.
Where am I?
Dave, you've been in a coma for 35 years.
Where are my cigarettes?
This is the future, Dave. We don't have cigarettes anymore. We have e-cigarettes.
Do they come in a variety of flavors? Like mint, fruit, desserts, and tobacco?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Are they cheaper?
They are cheaper.
Is it a cleaner way to smoke?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Where do I get these dream cigarettes from?
Well, Dave, you get these futuristic cigarettes from www.tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke from Smokeless Image.
You still have tiny URLs in the future?
We haven't come up with a better system. Also, there are no more elephants in the future. Dave, I never knew you could shred like that.
If I could play guitar, this is how I would.
I think there's a raven in the studio.
Is that my alarm going off in the morning to wake me up at 5:25 a.m. when I get up in the morning?
I bought this record, and when it ends, it's just crows on loop.
You mean the counting crows?
Yeah. It's a little self-indulgent, I feel.
It's fucking annoying. That's what it is.
Is it embarrassing to listen to?
No.
So you would not give...
You're not allowing me the segue, I see.
You would not give the new Jack White album 10 out of 10.
I wouldn't give the Crows 10 out of 10.
Oh. What about the Black Crows?
Yeah. I would give them nothing.
Yeah, they get 0 out of 3 million on account of them stinking on every record.
Anyway, it's time for a transition.
You're listening to the Crows conversation here.
Yeah. Did you know a flock of crows is called a murder? Thanks, everyone.
Fascinating.
Oh, have you ever seen that movie, The Murder of Crows?
With Cuba Gooding Jr.? I have seen
so
that.
So fucking bad.
It is.
There's nothing worse than a movie about books.
Like, literally, it's about books.
Yeah, it's about someone writing a book.
Just 2 hours of someone typing at a fucking computer. All right.
Yeah, like, have you ever seen Murder of Crows?
No.
It was like a direct-to-video movie.
Like all Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes.
movies since 2002.
Yeah.
And what was that horribly cringy one with Bradley Cooper that came out recently?
Oh, Limitless?
No, The Words.
Oh, I didn't see that. He's also writing a book in Limitless where he takes like a super drug that makes him smart, and he can tell you. What an interesting conversation we're having about these.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, this
we're
movie,
three
right?
dullards.
If you've just checked in, this is the Dullcast. Also known as cutprintfilm.com.
Yes.
Yes, if you just checked in. I don't know how that would be fucking possible.
Well, check in at 3 and check out is at 12.
Yeah. So. If you've just checked in on your... I forgot the name of the app, so we're going to cut this whole joke.
Yeah, let's just cut it out right now. Seriously.
All right.
It's quite embarrassing.
Oh, look at you.
What a good transition.
I see. You can do the segue, but I'm not allowed to. All right, fair
Get
enough.
Off that segue, Dave. Stop riding it around your basement like Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Oh, that's a good embarrassing movie.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
I was embarrassed for everyone who saw that and made it.
All right, so we had a list that went up on cutprintfilm.com on Friday.
That's right. Every Friday we do a list.
And this week's list was, last week's list, if you're listening to this podcast in present time.
Yeah, if you're not from the past.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
That's right. If you're listening 3 years in the future, 3 years ago we wrote a list.
And then I went on that shooting spree.
Yes, there was that spree killing.
Sorry, everyone.
Boy, we have gone off topic really badly. We did a list last week about movies that embarrassed you. Movies that embarrassed their audience.
Right, and to be clear, it's not movies with embarrassing scenes. It's movies that just have scenes that are just...
You feel embarrassed for the actors involved and everybody on set that had to watch this happen.
It's uncomfortable to watch. I don't know about you guys, but if I'm somewhere and something embarrassing has happened, I feel the need to just literally look away as if I could distance myself from what's going on.
I start getting hot.
Yeah, exactly. I get really sweaty and just uncomfortable.
I feel my face getting red. Thank you. I've been working out my core.
Dude, that fucking there's this scene. It must be a deleted scene from The Counselor. It's on YouTube under "I Wear Stockings." The Counselor clip.
It's really awkward.
This you scene, showed that to us.
It has changed the way that I think about Michael Fassbender. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
Well,
plus his dick wasn't out in that scene either. So
which is why I stopped. Yeah.
I hardly recognized him.
It's like so awkwardly cut.
It's poorly edited.
Like an SNL skit. Like it feels like there's going to be canned laughter at some point.
Right.
Do you have any tap pants?
Yeah, it starts out with him going, "Do you have any tap pants?" Now, first of all, When was the last fucking time you went anywhere and asked someone for tab pants?
Yeah.
What the fuck are tab pants? I thought he was saying tap pants.
Yeah.
Which makes a little more sense.
You wear them with tap shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Like tap dancing pants. But what are tab pants? Does anyone know?
Nice hand.
Yeah, yeah. He's talking about like the hand.
He knows all about like fabric.
And it just comes off as incredibly
and
creepy.
And Natalie Dormer's in it.
Yeah.
Being just as weird as he is.
And she's in the end of the movie, but I guess this scene establishes that she's an actual character in the film, unlike the actual version of the counselor, where she shows up for one fucking scene.
The entire interaction is so, like, bizarre.
Yeah, he says, you should wear stockings. And she says, I am wearing stockings.
And then she pulls up her skirt and shows him that she's wearing stockings. What is this?
And then he goes, those look like pantyhose. So right away, this is the most boring conversation. It's like...
But then, all of a sudden, the characters are talking and their lips aren't moving.
Yeah, it's really good.
Maybe that's what they're thinking.
Yeah, but it's so bad.
It's all of a sudden a Garfield cartoon. Odie shows up. Nurmals to Abu Dhabi. Yeah,
it's really weird.
It's awful.
Michael Fassbender is Garfield.
And just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, Michael Fassbender goes, can you wrap those up? And a police scanner starts playing over top of the whole scene.
Yeah,
it's yeah. Just turn into Woody Allen briefly there, because that's how that scene makes me feel.
Just look that up on YouTube.
If you do anything with the rest of your life, you have to watch
look up the counselor deleted scene.
Yeah.
You should wear stockings.
But aside from that, you guys have any other items that didn't make our list?
So yeah, I have a big one that I'm kicking myself for not including on the list in the major motion picture. Gigli, starring Ben Affleck and his then... Were they ever married? It was his girlfriend, I guess.
Yeah, remember they were Bennifer.
Oh, that's right. His then...
Bennifer.
I don't know if they were married or did his paramour, Jennifer Lopez.
His muse.
They weren't Benjamin.
What's that?
They weren't Benjamin.
No, surprisingly, the tabloids did not call them Benjamin.
Benjamin did not catch on. But so they made a film together. They made two films together. One was called Jersey Girl, which was also bad, but... This film is called Gigli, and in the film, for those who haven't seen it, I have, because I like
Jesus. You're a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, like Jesus, I'll die for your sins. So I saw Gigli, and the plot of the movie is Ben Affleck plays a hitman, and Jennifer Lopez also plays... Yes. Jennifer Lopez is also a hit woman. She's an assassin, but she's a lesbian. But Ben Affleck really wants to have sex with her, because he's this generic... Yo, like
this was a Kevin Smith movie, right?
No, Jersey Girl was a Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Gigli was directed by Martin Brest, who also directed Meet Joe Black. So anyway...
Well, that's enough talk of him.
So basically the whole movie, Ben Affleck is trying to basically have sex with Jennifer Lopez.
Right.
Because she's a lesbian and he's like, I want to have
sex. She's a prize and he can win her.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, like real men act. So...
Good character.
Eventually, she gives in to his wily charms, and she encourages him to, you know, go down on her, eat her out, basically. And then she says this. So let's play the scene.
Where are you going?
It's turkey time.
Huh?
Gobble, gobble.
And
yes, that's right. And then we all leave, and we are ashamed.
And nobody feels good about it.
So yeah, basically she's encouraging Ben Affleck to eat her out by saying gobble gobble.
That aside from being just an utter despicable turnoff is like who would write that? A man, sat in his office.
A woman clearly did not write that scene.
A man sat in his office and wrote that.
Yeah, an actual turkey, a butterball turkey.
Yeah. Tom Turkey,
someone
screenplay writer.
Someone took a frozen Thanksgiving turkey and slammed it on a keyboard until it typed out that fucking scene.
See, now that's a film I would watch. The story of Tom Turkey, screenwriter.
The turkey who pecked his way to stardom.
Good Lord.
What do you got this week, Tom?
Well, I have this gobble-gobble scene. Tom, you've turned the same scene in for 3 weeks.
Stop writing Gigli films. So, yeah, that's a stupendously uncomfortable scene that should have... Gigli is also... It's like a three-hour movie.
Is it really?
It's really long. So that's a scene that could have easily been cut from that film.
I never saw that movie because it was in and out of theaters in the blink of an eye.
I saw it on DVD.
Okay.
I specifically saw it because everyone said it was terrible. And I'm the type of person who, because I hate myself, I go out of way to find really painful movies because right.
You're a masochist.
Yeah, I'm a masochist, more or less. I'm like Mel Gibson. So
it's almost like a punching bag at this point, though, that movie.
It is.
Right. That's why we're not really beating up on Gigli. We're beating up on Tom Turkey.
Yeah. And I would like to say that's a movie that you say, oh, it's not that bad, but no, it's bad.
Yeah, some movies are like that.
Did you ever figure out who wrote that bad boy?
Gigli was written by, is actually written by Martin Brest, the director.
Oh.
So this is a passion project for him. He really felt strongly about the motion picture Gigli.
So right after we posted the list, I turned on the TV and the montage from Rocky IV was on.
Oh,
I couldn't believe how cringe this was.
Is that the one where he's working out with, like, well, it's a good contrast because the character of Drago, he has this super futuristic gym because he's Russian Superman, and Rocky's in the woods.
Rocky's literally barbell curling a log.
We're watching it on YouTube right now. He's fucking pushing horses through the snow. He's literally pushing a horse.
It gets to the point where Rocky has a sled attached to his back and he's crawling, and the other guy has like a cool sled crawling machine.
He's cutting a log with a back saw. It's like, what is this?
Well, that's how Rocky and Drago's lifting weights. Rocky's throwing sticks.
And
he's throwing sticks.
Just picking up logs and throwing. He's in Siberia, I guess.
Look,
there it is. This is a great cut.
He's on his hands and knees pulling a sled as if he's in the Iditarod.
So yeah, Drago is on this machine where he can simulate crawling through the snow. But Rocky, because Rocky is a real American, he crawls through the snow like a real man.
That's right.
Oh, and now he's doing pull-ups in fire. He's surrounded by flames.
There's a ring of fire.
I think Rocky, he descended to the eighth circle of hell to do pull-ups.
So you're choosing this?
Pull-ups.
You're choosing this as your
because there are more Rocky montages which are really awkward.
Well, even in just Rocky IV alone, there are many cringe scenes. There's the scene with the robot wishing Paulie a happy birthday.
I think in Rocky, I think it's 3, where there's a scene where he's running on the beach with Apollo Creed and they jump into each other's arms, and it's incredible.
Yeah, I think that movie has more homosexual undertones than Nightmare on Elm Street 2, to be perfectly honest.
And that's a lot.
Yeah. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with that.
No,
it's
overt.
It's like, what is happening here? Surely somebody's aware that this is going on.
Okay, I'm going to turn off the montage if that's okay with everybody.
That's fine.
Rocky 4 also has that amazing ending where Rocky single-handedly ends communism.
That's the other cringe scene where
he's like, if I could change, you can change, and then Gorbachev gets up and claps.
And his birthmark falls off.
I didn't draw first blood.
No, that's a different film.
So yeah, that's a good one.
All right, another embarrassing scene that I was going to put on the list, but we already had so many good ones that I just ended up not including it. But I kind of feel shitty about not including it because it is awful.
What is it?
It's Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's as Mr. Yuniyoshi. Holy shit.
That is endlessly embarrassing.
Feast your earballs on this.
Mr. Goraitri. Someday, Mr. Goraitri. What happened to you anyway? You take off for the powder room, and that's the last I see you.
Now, really, Harry?
Harry was the other guy. I'm Sid. Sid Arbuck. You like me, remember?
Mr. Goraitri! I wrote this!
Is that Mickey Rooney?
Oh, darling, I am sorry, but I lost my key.
But that was 2 weeks ago! You cannot go on or keep ringing my bell! You disturb me! You must have a key made!
That hurts. That was bad.
Did you see what he looks like?
Oh yeah,
he's got these fake buck teeth in.
He's essentially Bugs Bunny.
Oh yeah, this is bad. This is real bad.
It's every bad Asian stereotype you could think of, personified.
Miss Go Rightry, are you? No, thanks.
I kind of want to leave now.
Yeah, that's the feel bad scene of the half century.
Like that segment is so bad that you can't even really joke about it. It just makes you like
it makes you feel like shit.
It's for another time though.
No. It is, but at the same time you
not an excuse.
Yeah, you knew they had to realize even while filming that it was a bad idea.
Yeah, they couldn't find an Asian guy to do that bullshit. So they got a white guy to do it.
Maybe every Asian guy read that line.
Yeah,
said,
exactly.
No.
They said, excuse me, what is this nonsense?
They said perfectly articulate and...
Perhaps you didn't notice I had a shred of self-dignity.
Don't you feel... That's an interesting topic, though. When actors do agree to mock their own culture, like playing like an over-the-top stereotypical version
of their own culture...
Yeah.
That's dodgy too.
It's bad, but at the same time, the people of those races, they need work because Hollywood isn't throwing roles their way. So
that's true. So they're backed up against the wall.
Yeah, you get so desperate to the point where you're going to say, "All right, I'll take this terrible role just so I can pay the bills."
In my mind, I like to think that every Asian actor that they asked to do this said, "Get out of here."
Yeah.
I would rather die in the street than make a mockery of myself and my culture like this.
I hope that's what happened. I hope they asked a million Asian actors and they all said no.
In my mind, that's what happened.
Yeah,
so I'm sticking with that.
Just so we can feel better. Let's pretend that's what happened.
It's so irritating, though. Like, on the Big Bang Theory, there's that Indian guy and he just plays, like, the most over-the-top stereotypical Indian, and it's just like, why not
feathers on and he lives in a teepee?
I mean actual Indian.
Oh, I know what you meant, Dave. I was just being facetious.
And it's just like, why not just let him be like the way he really is? You know what I mean?
Oh, like make him an actual character?
Because that wouldn't be hilarious.
For Dad. My dad wouldn't love it then.
It's just so... It's aggravating.
I have never seen that show, but every day at work, someone at work will say, "Do you watch The Big Bang Theory?" And I'll say, "No."
No, but Middle America loves that show, and it's just helping them.
Huge. It's a huge hit. It's been on for 27 years, I believe.
It's just helping them stay in their fucking bubble of horrible stereotypes.
Yeah, it just reinforces garbage in both culture and comedy, because that show is anti-comedy.
Oh yeah,
not a joke to be found.
People love it. They love that show.
So this has been the sitcom talk.
Yeah, has been the we.
Sorry,
hate
I didn't
Big
mean
Bang
to go
Theory.
Into Cutprint TV.
So yeah, those are the three picks that we kind of left off the list.
So yeah, if you listener at home have your own scene in a film that just makes you
cringe,
red in the face, feel free to tweet it at us. We're on Twitter.
At Cutprint Film.
The way I worded it for the Independence Day one was that it made me want to snap my spine and sit in my theater
seat
backwards.
I'm going to say that was the one on the list I don't entirely agree with.
Really? I watched it again on my TV. I put it on the big screen, and because it's an enormous screen, 117 inches.
Whoa! I mean, it's definitely corny, but I never feel...
I was so uncomfortable.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
You must have a nostalgic attachment.
I just love
film.
Independence. I can't help it. Don't you guys remember when the president rallied us all against those aliens? It was a great historic moment.
He fucking says, "Maybe Independence Day won't just be an American holiday."
Well, it's not, because there's Mexican Independence Day, and many, many other countries celebrate their independence from tyranny.
Oh. It's just so...
Yeah.
Dave, you just hate America. Just admit
that's
it.
True. He's a pinko. Yeah.
Get out of here, commie.
Guys, McCarthy might be listening.
He's long dead.
He loves podcasts.
Unless he was brought back.
I believe McCarthy is in the More Like Radio chat room under the name Bunghole Surfers.
Oh, man. We just got a little meta.
You're just typing, "Fuck you."
Yeah. I'm coming for you, Dave.
All right, we did have another topic on the list.
We did have another taco. It was too big to eat.
Chris wants to talk about movies that you thought sucked, but don't.
Right. So
the second time you watch them.
Yeah, so this week, Dave has an article going up about the film Only God Forgives, and it's basically giving the film a second look.
Only Dave forgives, apparently. Right, guys?
Mm.
Yeah.
Let me do it again. Only Dave forgives.
Yeah. Jeff, you had too much of that taco.
Dave, you take it away.
Only God Forgives is a movie that I thought I legitimately, you can go back on the podcast
right.
because I think it was like episode 4 we talked about style over substance
right.
and I accused this film of doing that, and it doesn't. There's so much substance when you watch it, and it, I don't want to ruin my fucking article, but
yeah, just talk about it briefly.
It's
yeah.
a good film. Have you ever seen it?
No, I have not seen
I'm
it.
I'm really interested to see what you think of the movie.
I believe it's on Instant. So
it
I
is.
Right.
Yeah, I just watched it 3 times.
That's the kind of dedication that we put into this site and podcast.
It was all at once, though. He had 3 TVs going, yeah. just playing it.
It still counts, though.
It had a lot to do with Drive coming out on the heels of Drive.
Right. I sort of relate that to the Nirvana situation, where Nirvana put out Nevermind, and it was a huge commercial hit. And then they said, "Well, we don't want to be this commercial," so they put out In Utero, which is a I think a better album, but it's a messier, angrier album. And they're, you know, the fans they picked up with Nevermind were saying, "What the fuck is this?" And it's sort of similar, where Drive is Nicholas Winding Refn's most, I would say, mainstream movie.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not accusing you of saying, "Oh, you only like a mainstream shit," but it's a jarring, shocking thing to go from Drive to Only God Forgives, which is such a different fucking movie.
It's, and I understand while watching it why it doesn't connect with a mainstream audience.
People hated this movie. It got eviscerated.
But for people who love cinema,
right.
this is a good movie. Like, when you, I'm really interested to see what you think. And you may still hate it.
All right.
Because
if I do, I'll fake it for the show.
It is a divisive
film. I loved it.
Is that the word?
It's polarizing. It's
there are many devices within it.
Yeah,
there's a camera.
There's a Zune, I think.
Microsoft Zune, the one and only left.
But yeah, I won't say I love the movie, but I saw it after I read a bunch of reviews that were just like, this is garbage. Mm. And it sort of like deflated me because I love Drive. And I was like, oh, that's upsetting. But I watched it, and I thought, that's not nearly as bad as critics are making it out to be.
Yeah, I had the same experience the second time. I was like, that's nearly not as bad as I was making it out to be.
Well, I mean...
So, do you have any other...
I have a few.
Movies that we hated at first, and then when we revisit it...
just movies like I saw the first time, and I said, ah, I don't get it. And then I went back and rewatched it, and I said, oh, I finally get it. So the biggest one for me would be 2001: A Space Odyssey. When I first saw that movie, I was young, and I guess I didn't know as much. And I had heard so much about how it's a great movie, and I watched it when I was young, and I thought, I don't like this at all.
Yeah.
What am I missing? And for years, I went through that mentality of people are overrating that movie.
Where's all the dialogue?
Yeah, exactly. Why is this movie?
Where's the plot? Yeah. It's not plot-driven.
And then I rewatched it several times, and sort of watching it over and over again, it got ingrained
in
my mind.
Awakening, almost.
Yeah. This is an amazing movie, and I was wrong to judge it so harshly when I first saw it.
I had an identical experience with that movie, and I think a lot of people do.
It is, because it's not. It's unlike
so different.
Yeah, it's unlike any other movie. It doesn't.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no real. It doesn't focus on a plot per se, and the character. It's a very quiet movie. There's very little dialogue. Mm-hmm. So if you go into it not knowing what to expect, it's going to throw you for a loop.
I remember watching it as a kid, and it connected with something in me that I didn't like fully appreciate, but I thought it was cool to just look at. You know what I mean? Like I didn't understand it at all.
I think that's a reason a lot of people did like it.
Right.
Yeah. When it first came out.
Well, because
out,
like, it came out, what, 1960?
Yeah, and it just looked incredible, and like we were in the space race.
I mean,
we were 20 years unborn.
That's right.
For the time it was made, that movie is...
It was before 2010. We hadn't made contact yet.
I mean, the effects in that movie...
That's the year we make contact, for anybody that's paying attention.
For the effects in that movie still hold up today. It was made 30-some years ago, so...
I want to touch on that later with my recommendation.
Please don't. So,
I want to list a couple movies here together.
How about you just list one?
All right, I'm going to do two at a time here. Royal Tenenbaums and Rushmore.
Really?
I'm going to lump them together.
I just wrote down Royal Tenenbaums because his confession. I didn't know we were doing confessions. Yeah, I thought it was
the real world confession booth.
Well, I'll just preface that by saying in the Wes Anderson theme, I did not like Life Aquatic when I first saw it, and then
I can see why.
And now I love that movie, but so
yeah, I like that immediately. But I can see why somebody would not like that.
What
at
was
first.
Your experience with Royal Tenenbaums?
Oh, well, it's this. I had the identical experience with Royal Tenenbaums and Rushmore. They both came out. Rushmore came out, I believe, when I was either a sophomore or a junior, probably a sophomore in high school. And I remember reading in Spin magazine how cool it was. And this guy, Wes Anderson, was coming off a Bottle Rocket. And he had all this hype behind him. And I was like, oh, this sounds great. It was an interview with Jason Schwartzman. I had Bill Murray, who I love from Ghostbusters. So I rented it. And I was like,
what the fuck am I watching?
Who cares about any of this?
Where are all the jokes?
Yeah. Yeah. It said it was a comedy. Where are the jokes?
Why is Bill Murray so sad?
Yeah. What
year was that?
2000.
99
or 2000.
And because this kind of touches on the thing we talked about before, like the moment you had your film awakening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's still.
Rushmore was 1998. Actually.
Yeah. Okay. After that, a couple years passed, and I think I was a senior in high school when Royal Tenenbaums came out. And I was like, all right, this looks great. I like Bill Murray yet again. I like Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
I like I don't really like Danny Glover, but he's in the movie. So I'm going to list them right now.
How can you dislike Danny Glover?
So I rented that one when that came out on video, and same thing. Like, at this time, I saw where the jokes were. I just didn't think they were funny. It wasn't until, I guess, like 5 years later when I went back and watched them, and I was like, oh, I get it. This guy, Wes Anderson, like, really cares about these characters, and these are character-driven movies. They're not, like, not plot-driven or anything like that. This is about characters and how they interact with one another.
It's such a bizarre experience because you go – I had a similar experience. I had an older brother who – him and all his friends loved Royal Tenenbaums, and I was like, cool, let me check this out. It's gonna be great. And I watched, and I was like, oh, my fucking brother and his friends suck. This blows. But then to watch a movie years later when you start to appreciate film and watch it and go, oh, wow, this is one of the greatest movies I've ever seen.
There are the jokes. They're all over the thing.
This is a work of genius.
Yeah, it's
I was literally too stupid to get it.
Yeah, that's what it was. I was just dumb. I was young and dumb, and I was probably listening to Korn or something. I had better things to do. I had giant pants on.
Yeah.
These pants are huge. I can't watch this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened with me with Life Aquatic, but I was sort of the reverse of that, where I loved Rushmore and I loved Royal Tenenbaums, so I was really excited for Life Aquatic. And even though that movie is clearly a Wes Anderson movie, it's different than those other two movies. So I sort of got thrown off by Life Aquatic, and I said,
maybe it's because I didn't have that connection with Royal Tenenbaums, because when I saw Life Aquatic
and
in theaters on Christmas, the first day it came out, and I was like, wow. And it, for years, it was my favorite. I mean, until Grand Budapest came out, it was my favorite Wes Anderson movie.
I mean, that was the first Wes Anderson movie that clicked with me the first time.
Really?
Because I was already on board, and I got it at that point.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I didn't like it the first time I saw it in theaters, but then when it came out on DVD, I watched it, and I said, what the fuck was I thinking? This is great. So I don't know.
One for me was Noah Baumbach's The Squid and the Whale.
I've still not seen that.
I haven't. I still don't. I appreciate it, but I can't enjoy
it. I don't love
it,
but it's a better film the second time I watched it.
And I'm a negative person, but it's such a negative movie that it's almost too much for me.
It's hard to like.
Yeah.
It like kind of demands you not to like it.
Yeah. Every character in that movie is atrocious.
Oh, that sounds like Happiness.
Yes. Yeah, it actually is a lot like that.
You have any more, Chris?
I also had Blade Runner. When I first saw Blade Runner,
I can agree with you on
I
that
hated
one too.
I hate it. I was like, why does everyone love this movie? Well,
this dialogue sucks.
Yeah, but that's another movie that I watch it now, and I love Blade Runner. But it's just, and then.
But still, that Tears in the Rain bit is shit. Let's let's call shit shit, and let's admit.
And then
I'm going to make a confession and say that I had the same experience with Blade Runner, and I still
you don't like
really
it. Like I still have a tough time getting through it.
I mean, have you seen the 800 different cuts of
it? That's the other thing, is that it's so confusing. It's like, what should I be watching? Like,
when they released that Ultimate Director's Cut back in theaters, I went and saw that in the theaters, and I loved that. So that.
What about Turbo Edition? How was that one?
That was not as good.
Oh.
EX4 was great.
Yeah. And then I guess the one other one I will add is Where the Wild Things Are, the Spike Jonze Where the Wild
you
Things
Are. You are all by yourself on that one. I am not coming over on your side of the fence, Wilson.
So I don't know if you guys remember, but that movie had the most amazing trailer I have ever seen for a movie. That trailer was
fantastic.
It was fantastic.
Cinematic.
Children!
That trailer...
Don't grow up!
That trailer... That trailer alone was better than most movies.
Yeah, it was great.
So, and the trailer had this very specific tone to it. And while the movie's tone was similar, it wasn't quite what the trailer was. And the movie left me a little cold when I saw it. Mm-hmm. The first 10 minutes of that movie, where it's Max acting
being
like
a brat,
dick,
yeah.
I still think is fucking awful. And I know that's the point, to establish that he's this terror, but it rubs me the wrong way. Like, there's a part, he bites his mom's leg, and it's like, what the like, that made me physically angry when I watched it in theaters. I was like, why is this fucking happening? But when it came out on DVD, I watched it again because I said, I gotta give this a second chance. And I love it now. It's a gorgeous movie. It's so good.
It is a very visually stunning movie.
But when I saw that in theaters, I left the theater sort of angry.
I didn't like it.
Really? And you don't like it at all?
I don't like it to this day.
Yeah.
Dave and I, we saw that together.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even remember if you liked it, but I didn't.
I don't love it, but...
I didn't like it. I was expecting more. I know it's
visually.
It's like a 25-page book. I understand.
So you guys sort of had like the first half of my experience where you saw a great trailer and you went in and you hated it.
Yeah.
And you just didn't come around like
it
I did.
It had that great soundtrack.
That trailer is... I'd rather watch that trailer than most movies.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that film started the trend of very good trailers making me kind of nervous about
a
movie.
Yeah.
Because now when a movie has a deceptively good trailer,
you can't
trust it.
Yeah.
Kind of like Godzilla.
Yeah, and Man of Steel, which is my go-to for great trailers, not so great movie.
Dave, do you have any more?
I'm going to say Magnolia was one that I had to rewatch to appreciate.
See that.
It's still not my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
It's not his best.
But I loathed it the first time I saw it. I just watched it again recently, and I was like, okay.
I really
like
Magnolia.
Can I guess what you didn't like about it? I'd like to guess.
Yes.
I'm going to guess two things. Was Tom Cruise one of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Was the other one William H. Macy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's...
Really?
Yeah. Well...
The thing I didn't like about Magnolia is that really long sequence where Julianne Moore's trying to get prescriptions, and she's like, suck my dick, and she says it like 20 times.
That's actually kind of awesome.
That upset me.
Yeah, that I can see why you wouldn't dig that the first time.
No, yeah, definitely.
I did like that the first time.
And it's such like a weird movie. Like it's kind of loosely tied together.
It's a very weird movie.
And it came out in that time when we were doing these movies where people had crossroads with one another. Like Crash.
Interconnected movies.
Yeah, 21 Grams.
Babel
was one of them.
Yeah.
Babel. Yeah, Babel. Oof. Oof.
Let's do an interconnected podcast.
Yeah, we could do that.
We'll cut it all up. I'll do it by myself, and then you do it. And
we'll splice it together.
I have two more real quick. Alien 3. I didn't like that when I first saw it. And that was that movie came out when I was much younger.
Yeah, I remember I saw
it. When I saw it, I was aware of how negative the reception was.
Right.
So I was kind of just like, you know, falling in line with all the negative shit about Alien 3. But years later when I watched, I think I was like, home sick from school, I watched every single Alien movie in one day.
The quadrilogy?
Yes, even the fourth one. And I ended up really, really enjoying the third one. I still like it. I think it's a great movie.
I was such an Alien fanboy that it didn't even faze me that it was
bad.
It's
a standalone
film. This is fucking awesome.
That's sort of that same sort of thing where it follows Aliens, which is, you know, this huge movie, and then Alien is sort of the complete opposite.
And I understand why people were kind of pissed off. Like, people that loved Aliens were mad that Newt and Hicks
died instantly
in the opening frame of the film. But I didn't really have that connection to those characters.
I was never a big Newt fan.
I never cared. So.
Yeah.
Newt. My name's Newt.
They mostly
I really
like
the movie.
Mostly.
And I really like Charles S. Dutton, who's in that movie. And I think
that is a great. I mean,
he's a fantastic actor.
Charles Dance is in that from Game of Thrones, and he's very good in that. It has a great sort of character actor British cast.
Yeah, and it's just a cool standalone sci-fi story. Yeah. I really enjoy it. My other one is The Big Lebowski.
Wow.
And I really do like that movie now, but when it first came out, it was the opposite of Alien 3, where everybody was just lavishing, like just throwing praise on it. And there weren't conventions yet by the time I had seen it, but
there was no Dude Fest.
Yeah, but just everybody talked about how great and hilarious it was, and I was just like, I see what's funny here, but I'm not buying it. And then a few years later, I watched it again, and God damn it. I laughed the entire time, and I'm a fan of that movie now.
Yeah.
Do you think there's no way to tell this, but do you think there's movies right now that we think are shit that we will, have we kind of peaked where we can appreciate?
It's possible. I think it's definitely possible.
Really?
You're always allowed to be wrong.
I mean, maybe one day I'll sit down and I'll rewatch Man of Steel and I'll say, this is not as atrocious as I thought it was.
Or maybe RoboCop, the remake, will maybe turn the out RoboCop to be a classic.
Maybe you guys will rewatch Godzilla and love it, but not likely.
I think it could only be possible with the stuff that's so, like, dry and artsy. That
I mean,
like,
I mean, there you go. I mean, Only God Forgives is a perfect example. Yeah. I mean, you did not care for that movie, and now you really think it's something special. So it is possible. There you go. There's your proof.
All right. Should we do some movie recommendations?
Yeah, it is that time.
Well,
the perfect silence after that is
that happened. That was a thing that just happened.
Were you saying wheat? And that's wheat, wheat, wheat.
Oh man, that was really good.
Cutprint film style.
That was just simply breathtaking.
Fantastic.
That wasn't me.
Oh, who was it?
That was Cy.
You got him to do it?
It was thigh.
Actually, it was my thigh.
Oh, I don't understand that at all.
Let's play it again. No.
All
right. I was saying wheat.
I thought you were saying wheat.
Wheat. I'm going to go first because every single week I ask, who's going first?
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever gone first.
Please do. Anyway, my recommendation.
My recommendation this week.
You blew it instantly. This is why you don't go first, Jeff.
Good night, everybody.
Good luck.
My pick this week is The Thief of Baghdad.
Ooh.
Which version?
1940.
Okay.
This is a movie that... It's on the Criterion Collection, which is available on Hulu Plus, and I am swimming neck deep in this fucking thing. Like,
get out of there. It's dangerous.
Help me. There's no lifeguard on duty. I never learned to swim.
I'm on duty.
I'm from the inner city. Who's that strapping young man over there in with the chiseled abs?
I'm the Criterion guard. I'll save you.
Anyway, back to my pick. Yes.
Jay Swee.
If you have $8, get Hulu Plus because they have the entire Hulu or the entire Criterion Collection.
Is it $8 a month or
$8 a month? Yeah,
I can't swing that.
Well,
I need that money for Chaw.
my grandfather's here. My pick's The Thief of Baghdad. It's a 1940 film. And it won the Academy Award for Best Cinematography, Art Direction, Special Effects, and it's the first time they used blue screening in film.
Wow.
Which predates green screening, which predates CGI, pretty much. So,
which predates man.
Yeah, well, I think you've got it backwards. This film is pretty much what the Disney movie Aladdin is based off of entirely. Right. It's about this guy who's the king of Baghdad, and he's tricked by his vizier, Jafar, which you might find as a familiar name.
Oh, yeah, that's my dentist's name.
He is arrested.
Dr. Jafar. DDS.
Why do you have that parrot on your shoulder that has the horrible voice of Gilbert Gottfried?
See how snake-like I can be.
This film stars Gilbert Gottfried. Anyway, King Ahmed is tricked by his counselor Jafar, and he's arrested, and he joins forces with this thief that's also in prison named Abu, which you might find is another familiar name.
Oh, that's my dentist.
That's your other dentist. Yeah,
that's his assistant.
Yeah, Abu is not in The Lion King. He's in Aladdin. And they have to figure out how they can get him back in the position of king, because Jafar has seized his one true love, the princess. You might find this familiar with Aladdin. It's a really, really, really fun movie.
When's Jasmine come in?
There is no Jasmine. It's just the princess.
When does the genie make pop culture references?
There is a genie. He is voiced by Robin Williams.
Oh,
this,
great.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
But this film looks fantastic. Criterion did an amazing job. It looks, this is a film from 1940 that looks like it was made in the 70s.
Wow.
They did such a good job restoring. The colors like pop off the screen.
That's awesome.
Yeah. This is impressive restoration work by Criterion.
Nice.
But yeah, it's really good. It has like a, it gets a fantasy, right. And it has the tone of The Wizard of Oz sort of.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this really, all the characters are very colorful.
Surreal, kind of.
I wouldn't call it surreal, but fantastical.
Okay.
It's a great film. It's a lot of fun. I don't know. I can't imagine a bad setting to watch this in.
Yeah,
unless maybe you're at a funeral.
Yeah.
Or a bris. If you're at a bris, yeah. Don't watch this.
Or one of those bris funeral combos they do.
They're a little
awkward.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm excited about the Jeff Criterion adventure.
Yeah, I've gone gaga over Criterion.
Have you watched any shit yet?
Like actual shit?
Yeah. No, like a Criterion that you were like, oh.
Not yet. No, I have not.
Give it time.
Little Chris, it's your turn.
Thanks, everyone. My pick is the 1992 film Innocent Blood,
ooh,
directed by John Landis.
Oh.
So, John Landis, in case you don't know, used to make good movies. And he made a film called American Werewolf in London, which is a fantastic horror comedy. And this movie is sort of in that same
vein.
When
did he fall off?
Hi, David. I don't even know. It's been a while since he's made a good movie. So Innocent Blood is sort of in the same vein as American Werewolf in London, and that's a horror comedy.
Yeah.
And this film focuses on two things which you never thought you would see in the same movie, and that's vampires and the mafia. So the plot of this movie is there's a female vampire played by I don't want to fuck up her name, but I will because I can't.
Cruella De Vil.
That's it.
It's played by Cruella De Vil. Her name is Anne Paulrald. I can't pronounce it. Mm. She's French.
Oh.
She was in La Femme Nikita. She's a female vampire, but she has morals. So she only basically feeds on people who are assholes. So she's in Pittsburgh, and she's feeding on mafia guys because they're all assholes.
Right.
And so after she sucks their blood, she blows their heads off with shotguns so they won't become vampires. So she ends up encountering a mobster named Sally the Shark Marcelli, played by the great Robert Loggia.
I love Robert Loggia.
Robert Loggia is a fantastic character actor. So she bites his neck, but she's interrupted before she can blow his head off. So he becomes a vampire, and he starts turning all of his mafia goons into vampires. So the female vampire, she teams up with this cop, played by Anthony LaPaglia.
Oh, okay.
And so the cop and the vampire have to try and stop. No, the cop and the vampire have to try and stop the mafia members who are vampires. And it sounds
batshit insane.
It's great. It's funny, and it has a lot of great gore. If you love gore effects, this movie has really practical gore effects.
Oh, all right.
And it's got a lot of cameos from horror film, like Sam Raimi is in it, George Romero is in it.
Oh, cool.
Like, they're all just popping up in cameo appearances. It's an enjoyable movie. It's called Innocent Blood from 1992.
Can I say that my favorite Robert Loggia character is Big Ben Healy in Problem Child? And those movies are really, really bad, but I love his character of Big Ben Healy.
He makes everything good. He's great.
Oh, no.
Take it away, Davey baby.
I'm going to recommend Yodorovsky's Doom.
Oh.
Not Doom. Dune.
I wanted to see that.
Is Dwayne Johnson in this?
No, The Rock is not in this.
Oh, wait, they're the same person?
Are there any Casso demons in this?
So if you're not familiar with...
He's blowing me off.
Dave's not in the mood for your Doom jokes yet.
If you're not familiar with Yodorovsky, as most people probably aren't, he's like this really absurdist, surrealist director.
He's crazy, for lack of a better
might
word.
Might eccentric be a better word.
Sure, so he doesn't sue me.
From the 60s, who did a movie called El Topo.
Right.
A movie called Holy Mountain.
El Topo is insane, by the way. That movie is ridiculous.
They're literally batshit crazy movies. Well, they're not literally batshit, but anyway.
That would be impressive.
You're literally misusing literally.
I'm watching this movie. It's made of batshit.
So Yodorovsky's Dune.
Is that how you pronounce his name? Because I never know how to say it. All right, good.
And I actually, while watching the movie, I was like, I'm going to recommend this. So I'm going to keep
listening,
paying attention
so I know how to, say
to
his
how
name.
People say his name. Follows how he was going to make Dune.
Right.
Which is a Frank Herbert novel. It's pretty much the sci-fi Bible at this point. Or at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty much an untellable story, I would say.
And it was eventually made into a movie by David Lynch. And it's not good.
Yeah. No, it's awful, the David Lynch movie. But anyway, Yodorovsky's Dune takes you through the process of how he was going to make it. He actually has this giant book. It's like a foot
thick. Would you call it a tome?
Yeah. And it's just page after page. It's like he hired this guy, Mobius, who was a French comic book writer, to literally frame every shot of the film so that he could show it to studios and be like, look, this is exactly how we're going to film it. And then after he found Mobius, he was like, I need a guy to make like the spacecrafts and stuff.
So he hired Gwen Stefani and they did the hit Southside. Is that where we're going with this?
Well, he tried to get the guy from 2001, and his whole thing was like that he needed spiritual warriors. That's how he says it, and it sounds bad. Like it sounds like the way I'm saying it sounds terrible. But while you're watching the film, you're like, okay, I'm into this. Yeah. Like, and apparently, the guy who did the effects for 2001 was like a total businessman, and so he went into a theater right out of his office and watched Dark Star. And the guy who did the effects for that was Dan O'Banion.
Okay.
And so he hired him out of obscurity, basically. Mm-hmm. And then found Geiger, H.R.
Geiger,
out of obscurity.
Wow.
He started. Then he got Salvador Dali to play a role in the film.
Right. He played the role of the mustache.
And then Mick Jagger.
Well, he's my favorite.
Signed on to play a role in the
favorite
film.
Working actor this, living today.
He was great in Free Jack.
This movie would have been utter insanity.
I wish they had made it.
They call it the greatest movie never made.
Right.
Because it has like kind of seeded itself into almost every huge tentpole movie we see now. Because he was thinking of doing things in the 60s that quite possibly couldn't have even been done now.
Right.
Like, they're so insane. So after they put the kibosh on Dune, his team just went and made Alien. They got a director and made that. So it's like, if Yodorovsky never did this, there would never be an Alien, there would never be a Blade Runner, there would never be a Star Wars, because there's storyboard shots in his Dune book that are like shot for shot like in Star Wars.
That is
almost exactly the same. Like, you could tell because they made one of these books for every studio in.
Oh, so they were workshopping it like to everybody,
and you could tell that George Lucas might have got his hands on one of these books and was like,
"Oh, sorry, that Yodorovsky guy's really got something, guys."
I'm kind of excited because Nikolai Vinding Refn is in the. He's like he's one of the people being interviewed for the film.
Oh, okay.
And he's like good friends with Yodorovsky. He actually dedicated Drive and Only God Forgives to Yodorovsky.
All right.
I think he might make Dune, like Yodorovsky's
Dune. You know what? That would be cool.
It would be fucking insanely awesome if he did it.
He would.
Because it's also cool because as you're watching the documentary, you're watching a movie too. Because he pretty much explains the whole movie to you.
Yodorovsky.
Yeah.
He's still alive.
Yes.
Oh.
At the time of the movie, I haven't checked up on him, but right. I think he's still
alive. Well, I'll call him after we finish the show.
I'll send him a text. Right. Oh, God.
Well,
take my necktie off.
Put my bowling shoes on. Put my Indian headdress on.
I take this pair of sneakers off. Put another pair on.
take those off.
We're going to go to the land of make-believe.
And put on cement shoes.
Well.
Well, Robert Loggia's here, and you know what that means.
It's time to go.
It's time for him to sweep up the studio.
The Criterion guard is asleep.
Yes, I'm drowning in the pool.
Chris is wiping down the bar.
I'm licking all the residue off of it.
I'm branding somebody with hot iron.
I can't stop playing this piano.
Play it, Dave. Play it hard.
Man, that sounds good. Well,
I'm slowly going blind.
A lot of exciting things have happened on cutprintfilm.com this week. I can't think of any of them.
Yeah, I can't remember a single one, but they were fucking
We typed some
thrilling.
Articles up.
But even more exciting things will be happening this week.
That's right. What
and
do we got?
Onward.
What do we got coming this week, Dave?
We got a Only God Forgives article. We got a Night Moves article. We got a Moon article. We got tons of articles.
That's right.
An article comparing the original Cape Fear to the remake of Cape Fear.
Wow.
Yes.
We got a lot of good stuff coming. We also have a lot of new writers.
Yeah, I want to say hello.
Welcome
to Jacob Roman.
Yes, Jacob Roman, Carlisle Edmondson,
Marcus Pinn, Ronald Pickenpaw.
Yes.
Yeah. Cormac McCarthy.
Yes. And the great Stephen King.
Stephen King.
Oh, and Daniel Stidman. We got a whole. We're building a team here at Cutprint.
Edward R. Murrow.
No, he won't be. He's dead.
Oh.
Stephen King and Cormac McCarthy won't be joining us, but all those other names will.
We've assembled a team of awesome film writers because we're trying to bring you even more quality
film writing.
We're kind of burned out.
Yes, we. We're finding it difficult to provide you all this great content day in and day out. We needed a little help.
Yeah.
So we hired some fantastic young writers.
Well,
we can't wait to boss them around.
That's right.
Check us out on Twitter.
Facebook.
If you're not asleep.
Get us to those 500 likes so we can watch Adam Sandler make an asshole out of himself.
Or don't, you know.
Yeah. Get us the $4.99 forever. Yeah,
$4.99 and then stop. Cut it off.
And that about does it, everybody.
We'll see you here next week.
And go to cutprintfilm.com for more articles.
Have a beautiful evening. Or morning.
And take care. And remember to tip your waitress.
Please go to cutprintfilm.com for more movie reviews, opinions, and original articles about the movies we love and hate. And be sure to subscribe to the Cut Print Film Podcast on iTunes. I'm Moon Man, signing off until next time.